It's gorgeous. Are you looking at the changes, checking and planning to go? Maybe you're not.
What is this?
Of chopping pieces now.
Yeah. Yeah. But what else do you do the edging?
Not doing the edging. I'm doing the edging. Stop that. Stop it. No, it doesn't go there.
Clay. I saw these only a few of them. So if anyone has an app as a phone, a smartphone, it's on the website also. So on the course website, it's under the rabbis. Also for Zoom participants, there's a link on the website at the McCourt website, ccshul.com. From the rabbi's desk, which is in the menu under About McCourt, and it's the first link. Found it?
Mm-hmm.
Go on. Okay, a few people asked me to give a class on this topic. Oh, what's going on in Israel? I don't have political science expertise, but I do have some expertise in teaching what Tisha B'Av is about. So I think that it's not a coincidence that this is going on during this time of year. I think there's a lot of lessons we can learn from Tisha B'Av, fundamental lessons that can help us understand and deal with this terrible situation that's in Israel. In fact, this situation is in Israel. I'm not going to take political sides because I don't do that. I'm just saying that it's terrible that there's infighting, and this is one of the most serious situations we've had. People talk about civil war. It's not good. So let's see what Tisha B'Av could teach us about it. And the way I like to give classes is to explain principles of certain topics, and the principles are applicable in all situations for all perspectives. Meaning, there are principles, fundamental principles that we learn from holidays, from parshiot. That's what I like to teach, is to find the principles and see how it applies nowadays. Not to figure out how the lessons of the past fit into today. In other words, it's not looking at today and finding out how the Torah fits into what we believe today. It's looking at the Torah's principle and seeing how that principle applies to our situation. Very, very big difference. Looking from forward back as far as possible. We look from the back forward. Look at the back. What's the principle that teaches us how to apply today? Not that they all the way around. How many people look at Torah. Look at Torah as, if it, you know, I know what I want to say. Let me see how Torah tells us what, how justifies what I want to say. It's the opposite. Look at the Torah tells us the principle and see how that principle can be applied today. It's a very big difference. Yeah, but everyone understands the difference between those two perspectives. Yeah, everyone understands what I'm saying. Okay. So principle one, Tisha B'Av is caused by complacency in relationships. So we see how is the base mitzvah destroyed. Second base mitzvah destroyed is so due to the fact that there was wanton hatred on the period. It's in Yom Tenam Abayit. I'm famous Gemara that says sinas chinam caused the second destruction of the second temple. So the sinas chinam is, people use that word just baseless hatred. It doesn't mean baseless hatred. The word chinam is a very specific word, and we'll see how it's used in the Torah all the times. Chinam means free. For when you get something for free, it's chinam. It means there's no investment in it. You didn't care about it enough to invest in it. So sinas chinam doesn't mean just baseless hatred. It means it's type of hatred that comes from the fact that you were complacent about your relationship. You didn't care enough to invest in the relationship. You just hated someone because you didn't feel like figuring out how to love them. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuva, I just brought this halacha, but really the point of this is to show you that I always explain that Hilchos Teshuva, Teshuva is not just, according to Rambam, it's not something that you do if you fix this to fix a sin. It has to be much more than that. The Rambam puts Teshuva at the end of his Sefer Ma'ad. Sefer Ma'ad, though, it's a book, people say it's a book of science. Ma'ad is like knowledge. Ma'ad means philosophy, Jewish philosophy. It's a book of Jewish. He put Jewish philosophy into a book of laws, which is an incredible accomplishment. No one did that in the history of the world. He put philosophy into legal and illegal context. His structure in the Mishnah Torah is impeccable. He specifically does writes topics. There's a very specific structure. He puts the certain laws first, certain laws second. He puts within those laws, puts the he arranges it very carefully. So it's amazing that the Book of Philosophy, the last book he writes about is Hilchos Teshuvah, the laws of Teshuvah. That implies to me that he understands Teshuvah to be the meaning of life, which is meaning the bottom line of Jewish philosophy, which is the meaning of life is Hilchos Teshuvah. And I think the most amazing thing is it's a Mishnah that's prepared, Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. It says Yofa Sha'achas, 1 second is good, one second is better. Of tshuva, my son told him, of tshuva and good deeds in Olam Hazeh, in this world, in the whole world to come. Which implies that the essence of this world is two things. Tshuva, my son told him, are two different aspects of the essence of this world. Tshuva and good deeds. Tshuva is listed first. So it implies the whole point of this world is tshuva, which we have to explain why, maybe when we get to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, those 10 days of tshuva. 10 days of repentance, 10 days, which repentance is a terrible translation. Tshuva basically means the bottom line of Jewish of life. And so basically tshuva is the end result of Jewish philosophy. The bottom line, the essence of this, the purpose of this world, according to Rabbah. And the last thing he says about Hilchos Teshuvah is avodah me'ahava, serving God in love. So it implies that the whole purpose of this time of the calendar, which starts with Avilut, which is the time of the 3 weeks in the 9 days of Tisha B'Av, which leads into the next stage of the calendar, which is Nechama. Nechama means, means changing your mind, change what you think. Normally it's translated as a comfort, comforting the mourner, which leads into the 10 days of Tshuva, 7 days of comfort, 7 days of Shiva Dindachabta, 7 days of Tshuva, Nechama leads to 10 days of Tshuva. This time the calendar, we're supposed to go from Avilut to Nechama to Tshuva. And the tshuva is the bottom line to this whole process. So that means Avilut is the first step in the process of reaching tshuva, which is the essence of our purpose of our lives in this world. And obviously, tshuva doesn't just mean fixing sin. It means fixing sin, and that couldn't be the purpose of our lives in this world. It wouldn't make any sense. It's like just don't go in the world in the first place. Don't sin, and you won't have to fix it up. So it must be tshuva is much more than just fixing sin. But the point is that Avilut mourning is the first stage in this process that we see in our calendar. And the end stage of tshuva, Rambam calls it love. So what does it teach us? That Avilut is the first step in understanding how to love, how to have relationships, how to care about someone else, how to someone else matters to you. So you invested in someone in your relationship that really things that really matter to you. So Avilut has a tremendous amount to teach us about love and relationships. And therefore, I think it's makes sense. It's really caused the temple to be destroyed, the second temple to be destroyed, because Hashem is all about not valuing your relationships. Free relationships, free hatred. You don't value, you don't feel value enough to invest in your relationships. So that's what the Rambam teaches, I think, in Hilchos Teshuvah, the main at the end of Hilchos Teshuvah. The Rabbi Yochanan says in the famous Gemara about Kamsa, so he introduces the Gemara in a very strange way. He says, what is the meaning of that? Is when happy is the man who fears always, but who hardens his heart and so fall into mischief. Happy is the person who's always scared all the time. He says that Jerusalem was destroyed on account of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, famous story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, David Burden, the spoke on Shabbos. It's the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, where a guy was invited to a dinner. He's thrown out of dinner. He took revenge on the Jewish people. Because he was thrown out of dinner, the rabbi stood by, didn't say anything. So he asked the Romans, he asked Caesar to bring a sacrifice. He put a moon in the sacrifice, put a blemish in the sacrifice. The Jews decided not to bring the sacrifice. And because that Jerusalem was destroyed, the Romans were very insulted and upset. And they saw the Jews rebelling, and they destroyed Jerusalem. So that was the story. So he ends, Rabbi Yochanan also ends the story by explaining excessive humility of Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos destroyed our temple, burned our sanctuary, and exited us from our land. So he said, basically, the bottom line to the story is not what most people say. Most people say the story is about the baseless hatred that the rabbis caused towards this guy, Bar Kamsa. The question is, like David said in Shabbos, what was the point? How can that be the point? He was an evil person. He was a terrible person. So he should be hated. You should hate him. The Rambam says you should hate certain people. You ought to hate certain people. So this guy should be hated. So why is it called baseless hatred? It's not baseless hatred. There's a lot of reasons to hate this person. So the question is, what does Rabbi Yochanan mean by saying that we blame it on this rabbi who said you can't bring the sacrifice because you're afraid people going to think there's a blemish, that you have to bring sacrifices with a blemish? That's what the Gemara says. This rabbi said he was very, very strict. right? I always say being strict in halacha will lead to destruction. That so this person, this guy was strict. He said you can't bring this sacrifice with a blemish because we're afraid that people are going to think that you can bring sacrifice with blemishes. So Rabbi Yochanan said this guy's attitude destroyed the temple. Why? So, well, I think the reason is simple. The guy was saying. You have to worry about the fact that someone might bring a sacrifice to a blemish. But idiot, if you don't listen to the Romans, they're going to destroy the temple, and they're going to we're not going to bring sacrifice at all. So you can't sacrifice the whole temple because you're afraid people will think about things about bringing sacrifices. If the sacrifice is going to be ruined as a result, you know, he didn't take it seriously enough. Basically, he took it lightly. He said he didn't. He took this basic mitzvah for granted. So he said, it's like free. He took it free. He said he didn't value it. He basically didn't give importance to the fact that the temple wanted to be destroyed. But that's impossible. It never happened. He took it for granted. That's the idea of free. That you take things for granted. Important relationship. Important things are important. Should be important to you. This is the sin of the spies as well. The Ramban says, and this is a quote from an article, but I think this is a really beautiful explanation of the Ramban. The Ramban says that the problem with the Meraglim was not in their evaluation. They were supposed to evaluate. It was not the report. The report was that they had, the Ramban says, ain't so clear on this. You can't rely on a miracle. You got to go, the spies had to be sent to Israel in order to check out the land to prepare for the war. So that was fine. Ramban says they only did one thing wrong. The report was fine. The report was telling about the giants and they're going to kill us. And then, how are you? Thanks for coming. They were giants and they were going to kill us and they were going to destroy us. And we should be afraid of them. That was all fine. The problem was, he said one word was wrong. Ethos. Ethos means he tried to manipulate the people to think that it's impossible. Ethos means zero chance, impossible. So basically, what the idea was is that. They manipulated Jewish people's thoughts so that they wouldn't act. They wouldn't try to beat them. They would be psyched out from trying to conquer the land. That was the issue. The issue was that they were complacent about. They turned complacent about their desire to have Eretz Yisrael. This is what it says. They said in their response, we again, the word chinam, we tried over nothing. I mean, we cried for the fact that we had to do something. We had to act. Right? Chinam means free. It was free. Basically, it means that they cried for the fact that they wanted to be free. They wanted to be free from obligation. This is what they complained. They said to Jewish people, remember the fish that we ate in Egypt, free. Chinam, free of charge means we'd have to invest in it. We'd have to do anything. We just got it for free. We didn't invest. So investment in relationships. Is the opposite of that is free, being free. So we see this word free constantly repeated. Because the problem with the spies, the sin of the spies was they didn't care enough to say we God's on our side. We could accomplish it. It's like we say the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination has two quotes against us, two bullets against us. One of the Vilna Gaon explains. One of the bullets is, this is Pasha Shlach, it's telling us. One of the bullets is, you can't do it. You can't accomplish it. The only thing you can't do it when you don't care enough. If you really care about something, it has to get done. Right? So that the other thing is that you can't do it. You don't have to do it. I mean, if you feel like you have to do it and you can't do it, you're going to do it because it matters to you. You care about it. If it's chinam, if it's free, you don't care enough. It doesn't matter to you. So you don't act. You don't think in your mind, I can do this. I can accomplish this. I need to accomplish it. I must accomplish this. That was the sin of the spies. That was the sin of the Jewish people of the temple. That was the sin of Rabbi Yochanan, Zechariah ben Akulas. He said that I don't care enough to about the temple to worry about it getting destroyed. Basically, I take it for granted that it can't destroy it. All these things are very similar, the same idea. So, Tisha B'Av is caused by a complacent relationship as principle one, that we don't care enough about our relationships to invest in it, to do something about it. Principle number two is Avelud is about putting the past behind you. So Avelud is the first step in dealing with this problem of complacency in relationships. And this is what we see from the word Avelud. The first source says, indeed, it is definitely true. Aval, your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you should name him Isaac. So the word that the Torah uses is as Aval. So normally you would think that means but, your wife Sarah will bear your son. But Rashi says, no, it means definitively true. It is MS. It's the truth. This is true. This is definitive truth. Why is it the message? Why is it described as a velus? Because a velus means to definitively accept that. You accept, you put the past behind you. The only way to do that is to say, I accept this. Because I know a lot of people who mourn, they never get over the, they never get over their death. They live the whole life with the dead person in their life, in their minds. They should be alive. They could be alive. They may be alive. They can't let go. I mean, Lord, the purpose of it is sit on the floor and accept the fact that this happened. It's very harsh, but that's the only way to do it. The only way to overcome something is to accept that it's true. That's why we say Yiskad Avi Slash Mirabah. That's why we say Baruch Dayan Emes. It means we bless God. We say God is great. God's name should be sanctified and glorified. I mean, what does that mean? We accept what God did to us. We accept it. It's a Kaddish means we definitively accept what happened, and it's all we can move on. That's why Avilud also means but. However, means it's a word of transition. You see, point A, but point B. It's a transition from one point to the next. So the word Aval means we definitively accept what happened, so we can move on. That's putting the past behind. That's putting the past behind us. That's what it means to bury something. When you bury something, it means you put it behind you, and that's the only way you can be able to move on. You're able to accept the past because you can't change it. You just say that's it. This happened. I accept it definitively. That takes time. It doesn't tell me something you can just do overnight. That's a process of 3 weeks and 9 days. And Tisha B'Av is supposed to help us. And that's what we're doing now is leading on to Nechama. Nechama we'll see means to change the way you think. You only can change the way you think if you accept the past and you decide you're going to transition, you're going to move on. That's what Avilot means. Avilot means definitive. It means to transition. But however, and this is what the Tu B'Av is time in Nechama. It's the exemplary time in Nechama. It's 6 days after Tisha B'Av. It's a day, it's called Jewish Valentine's Day. But we see that the six things that happen on Tu B'Av. I'm just trying to move fast on. So mind reading the source number 2B.
You want to read it? I'll read it.
2B.
Okay. In the Babylonian Talmud, the Sages listed several significant events that occurred on the 15th of Av, including the annual holiday when the girls of Jerusalem were dancing in the field, the day when the deaths of those who perished in the desert ceased, the day when intermarriage between the tribes was permitted, the day when the tribe of Benjamin was allowed to marry within the congregation, the day when wood cutting for the temple rotation seized the day, when those who were killed at Beitar were permitted to be buried.
So there's a common peace at the end of the day. So basically, there's all these six things. There's another thing I mentioned also, but I'm going to mention six things. So you notice everything has to do with marriage or burial. Yeah. It's interesting, the word, the name of Rivka's name, she was the first wedding in the Torah, Rivka Nitzchak. Her name means kfur, means burial. And the in that parsha of Chai Sarah, we speak about the burial, we speak about a few burial of Sarah in that section of burials too, but the concept of burial is connected to marriage. I always joke about that. It's because when you get married, that's what the day, first day of your burial, your death. So, but the truth is that's a joke. The truth is that it really has a lot to do with one another. But these two concepts come together in two of, see, burial and marriage. Because the key to relationships, which is symbolized by marriage, is putting the past behind you. So, Avelut, putting the past behind you, meaning when you get along with someone, you have to say, if we had a bad night, things with it, we had an argument, you have to be able to bury that. And that's what I think is a beautiful thing. Says they went wood cutting for temple rotation ceased, so that's they call it. The Gemara says that was the day they stopped working. The reason they stopped wood cutting is because they need to be the situation needs to be dry in the summer when the things are dry. That's when the wood is best to be cut because that's dry wood burns better than moist wood. So that was the day Tu B'Av was the day that the nights started getting longer, and then winter starts its way into us. So the wood was too moist. And they stopped cutting. So the way they describe in the Gemara is Yom Tabar Magal, the day they broke the hatchet. But I think is with the term comes from burying the hatchet. What does it mean, burying the hatchet? It means you put the past behind you. You bury the hatchet, means you'll fight with someone else anymore. You stop fighting. I think it's an amazing analogy to this concept of burying the hatchet. It's the idea that you have to bury the past in order to get along with someone, in order to have a relationship with someone. You have to learn to put the past behind us. And that's the second principle that teaches us about Tisha B'Av. The Tisha B'Av is the day that transitions to Nechama, which is all about putting the past behind us. That's what bearing is about. I think it was all about. And then...
I will try to do that. I mean, I have promised burying the past.
Yeah, so that's
official. Except for the concept of marriage, I mean, it's very... very painful, you know, I mean, and I had to have, if we won't have to say this, but I think until the time of Mashiach, just forget it. I mean, it's never going to happen because, I mean, there's just too much dissension, right, between Jews and the Arabs, you know, and even among ourselves over there is with the political groups and religious groups that have like many different opinions of what should happen and what should happen, you know. So I mean, we're not all together. And so until we all, decide that we're all going to be together, I don't think the machine is going to come, you know. And I think there's always going to be problems, whatever it is. But, yeah. Well, we got to worry about the Arabs. But we got to worry, but they have to definitely worry about the Arabs over there. Yeah.
So I think that's what they were saying is very smart. That's the point I'm trying to make here. That really the idea is that things that we could do for among ourselves, if we do it ourselves, we could hope that other people will do it as well. Learn from us or the power of spirituality that will be in the world about what we do, we'll achieve amazing things. We have to realize that we have a tremendous power to affect the world. And you know, even if we focus on ourselves, it can affect other people in the whole world as well.
But also the other thing is, when the Messianic Age, I mean, all these other religions are going to conform. Like, you know, they're going to join us. You know, they're going to look at us as being the true religion, and they're going to join us. You know, and be together with us.
So, principle three on the second page: the promise of Elul to Nechama is about changing the way you think, but ultimately it's about being conscientious. So, what we see a couple of times the word Nechama is used in the Torah. That God changed his mind when he decided he wants to destroy human beings, and God changed his mind that he's not going to destroy the Jewish people. Those two ideas show you nechama, which means consolation or comfort, really means change your mind, change the way you think. That's the purpose of Avilut. Avilut means put the past behind you, you transition you're able to transition because of that to another stage. That stage is nechama, which means to change the way you think. That's the next stage. In order to go from the path of Avilut to Shuvah, which is ultimately love, right? To change our situation from Avilut to Shuvah, you have to go to Nechama, which means to change the way you think, which means you can't be complacent about the way you think about your relationships. You have to be active. And these two ideas of putting the past behind you and changing the way you think in terms of relationships are two active things that we can do in our minds, just in our minds, to change ourselves from being a situation where everything's chinam, everything's something we take for granted, and we don't think we have to do anything, we don't have to invest. This is the way to invest in our relationships is to put the past behind us and to change the way we think about our relationships. And the way we change what we think is principle four, tocha, which is the way admonition. We think admonition has to do with fixing someone else up, fixing another person doing the wrong things. But the Rambam is this was amazing. Rambam. I spoke to someone last week who told me that they were having a difficult time with the relationship with their children. And they told me what happened. They told me they heard a class from a rabbi who said that you have to give tocha to you have to admonish your children. I told him that's a big mistake. I disagree with this rabbi immensely. Like, translate. I think the Rambam says exactly the opposite about tocha. This is what people may. I think this makes it. The Chazon Ish famously said that you can't. We don't know how to give tocha nowadays. Why don't we not? Why can't we admonish people? We can admonish people. He said, to the point we can't expect our words of admonition to change other people. It can't happen anymore. Why can't it happen anymore? It's interesting to note the book of Devarim, which is the book we have to read before Tisha B'Av, is called Sefer Tochacha, the book of admonition. And Moshe Rabbeinu criticized Jewish people throughout the book. People look at that and say, well, he's a cranky old man. He's complaining about the Jewish people, complaining about things he didn't like about Jewish people. It's exactly the opposite. It's the Rambam telling us what tocha is, and we can see, have a new understanding of what tocha means. The Rambam says, this for the first four sources, are the Rambam and Hilchos Deos, chapter 6. So the Rambam says, everyone read the first four.
4a.
4a, b, c, d.
Each person is commanded to love each and every one of Israel as themselves. As it states, love your neighbor as yourself. Whoever hates a fellow Jew in his heart transgresses a Torah prohibition. As it states, do not hate your brother in your heart. When one person wrongs another, the latter should not remain silent and despise him. Rather, he is commanded to make the matter known and ask him, why did you do this to me? why did you wrong me regarding that matter? As it states, you shall surely admonish your colleagues. It is a mitzvah for a person who sees that his fellow Jew has sinned or is following an improper path to attempt to correct his behavior and to inform him that he is causing himself a loss by his evil deeds. As it states, you shall surely admonish your colleague.
So the traditional way of understanding these two last halachas is saying, someone that's on bed, you put him and say, "Why did you wrong to me? Why did you do wrong to me? You're an idiot. You hurt my feelings." And the last one is saying to someone, "You better correct yourself, or else you're going to be in trouble." That's why people normal. But the Rambam, if you be careful with Rambam, doesn't say that. He says that he's causing himself a loss by his evil deeds. That's the main thing. And the word tocha, he says, to correct. It doesn't mean to correct. It's a bad translation. I actually translate this from the internet. The word to correct, tocha, to ochiach, means to show them. So the example I give for this is if someone has a black mark between their teeth, about to go on television. See them, you know, you're gonna look like an idiot. Take the stuff out of your teeth. This person says, "You jerky, you shouldn't have pulled me that." The person says, "Thank you for my God. I would have made a fool out of myself. Someone's gonna see the black mark in my teeth. I look like those subway posters. They take out the teeth, so it looks like a fool. Let's say no teeth." So this is somebody, the other person recognizes you're benefiting them. That's what Rambam means. Rambam means you have to tell them they're doing the wrong thing by showing them that they're hurting themselves. If you don't show them you're hurting themselves, there's no mitzvah tocha. Same thing with the first halacha. First halacha is the reason to tell someone they're doing the wrong thing because it stems from, the reason I brought the first two halachas, it stems from the halacha of love your neighbor of yourself. If you love somebody else, you're going to say to them, "You hurt my feelings. I want to make up with you. I want to have a relationship with you." I tell them they're wrong. Tell them I want to love you again. I want to hate you. I'm doing this because I want a relationship to become better. So you see the Rambam introduces these halachas with love your neighbor as yourself. Don't hate your neighbor. Because this is a result of this. And the meaning of Rambam is a genius. You look at the halacha, the Torah, the way it describes it. It says, "You should not hate your brother in the heart. You shall surely rebuke your fellow. You should not sin again on his account. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." So you see, surrounding tocha, and admonishing your friend is don't hate your friend and love your friend. So the Rambam says, in the context of, the Torah tells us the context of admonishing someone, if someone tocha to tell someone they're doing the wrong thing, has to be in the context of don't hate somebody else and love somebody else. The Rambam brings in the halachas of, introduces the halachas of, love your neighbor yourself, don't hate your neighbor, as admonish your neighbor, because you should admonish them to make your relationship better with them. This is what I meant before. This was not from ChatGPT, but it's really cool. What's a conscientious person? Someone who demonstrates strong work ethic, integrity, and a commitment to doing what is right and necessary. So this is what I think that Avilut and Nechama teach us. Change what you think means you're a person who's conscientious. It doesn't just mean change randomly the way you think. Change the way you think means you care about what's right. You care about doing the right thing. You care about somebody else. You care about your relationships. This is what Tocha is all about. Tocha is about caring about someone else, not admonish them because you hate them. When you have this disagreement with someone else, you should show them in a way that out of love, you want them to change, not because you want them to think like you. You want them to change because you care about them. You love them. So so principle five. So sheep is nisham panenta like galut. This is what I think Tisha B'Av is teaching us. Not that we look to see what Tisha B'Av is teaching us based on today, but we see what Tisha B'Av taught us in the principles that we said above and help us apply to nowadays. So it's a very complicated thing. It's like Alan said, it's very hard to do this. It's critical that we adopt a loving and helpful mindset towards one another. We should generally desire what is best for others, and our actions must reflect this intention, fostering an atmosphere of understanding and support. This is the only way, in my opinion, it's the only way to design it. This is something that seems impossible. And the only way this happens, by the way, then we have trouble. We tell us the Jewish people do things like that. Basically, so the only time Jewish people come together is when we have problems. But then we realize that we're all in the same boat. We care about each other. We all of a sudden things become different. And the only way we could avoid that cycle is for us to understand what tocha means. Understand when we the Chazon says we don't know how to tocha nowadays. We don't know how to give tocha nowadays. We don't know how to admonish someone else. If we learn how to admonish someone else, I think that's the reason for our goals. The reason for our goals is because we think we have to correct other people. So we have to look at other people and say, "If I can't explain this to them," and this is what a good pure professional does. Good pure professional doesn't try to proselytize, try to convince other people they're right. Good pure person nowadays realize after all this understanding of what tocha means, they get it. Tocha, like Rabbi Nochman, but you say tocha doesn't mean to tell the people what's right, to admire someone else. Tocha means So I want to show them that you care about them and you, they matter to you. This, I think, the Hebrew movement learned over time. That first they looked at it as Christian missionaries. They end up becoming, I don't know all of them, but a lot of people nowadays, they look at, they learn from the experience. It's like Ogeshin Eilson, who was considered the God of Hador in the Yeshiva world, right after Kanievsky died, he just passed away. So there was a famous video that went on the internet about him. But what do you do when your children off the derech? What if your children smoke, start smoking and Shabbos, and they don't care about religion, they come on that, you know, things that all religious people think is the end of the world. So what do you do? So you got to tell them, like this parent said to me the other day, you got to tell them what's wrong. So we've got to say, no, you got to love them no matter what. Complete love for them, no matter, even they come home and they influence your their siblings, your children, other children. It used to be the idea to throw them out. No, you got to love them no matter what. You got to unconditional love. It's, I think, what the Rambam tells us at the end of Hilchos Teshuvah. A little bit of serving God out of love is unconditional love. Unconditional love is what we want from God and what God wants from us. Meaning, that's what Yom Kippur is about, not only about us asking God, forgiveness from God, but we ask forgiveness from God to say to God, we love you, even though you bring us Tisha B'Av, even though you bring us evil to us, even though you bring terrible things to us. This is what the Badish Rebbe wrote a list of sins that he did to God. He wrote a list of sins that God did to him. To God, if you forgive me, I forgive you. That's Tisha B'Av. That's Yom Kippur in a nutshell. Yom Kippur in a nutshell, saying to God, we love you so much. We don't care what you did. One day, the whole year we're mad at you. We're furious. We think God's unjust. He's a terrible God, and we all these bad things happen to us, and we can't understand why. On Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, we say, God, we forgive you. We love you, man. We love you unconditionally. Even though tomorrow we're gonna act, our attitude is gonna be different. Today, one day a year, we say, our real attitude towards you is we love you no matter what. And we say, God, in return, you love us no matter what. Even though we did all these sins, terrible things, you love us unconditionally. That's the type of love that Rav Gershon was talking about for your children. And everyone can understand that for children, you love your children no matter what. You love them despite everything that happens between you. You love them. You should, a good parent loves all his children no matter what. And nowadays, he said, it's more important because nowadays, children are brought up in a society where any insult to them will hurt them. And people say it's because children are weak nowadays. It's not true. Children value relationships more today than any other time. True relationship is unconditional. We love someone unconditionally. This is what we have to learn in terms of Tocha. When someone does something wrong, something you don't agree with, you have to love them unconditionally. You have to love them no matter what. It doesn't mean that you should get hurt by them. You should not protect yourself from because none of them thinks that way. But the attitude has to be that this is my fellow family members. These are my fellow Jews. I should care about them. And even though they think differently than me, I doesn't mean I have to think like them. It just means I have to accept them no matter what. And that's something that's not easy to think. I'm not saying something is practically easy to do, but at least we can do it in our minds. We can think in our minds that someone does something, at least something we don't agree with. We should try to look at it from a 50,000-foot perspective. Look at it from what perspective, and that attitude will enable us to achieve peace. But it's something that's possible to achieve. I'm not saying it's easy. It's not something but that's be our mind, our goal. I mean, just like the same way we have a hard time with God. Yom Kippur is a day in which we try to put everything aside. We can only do it one day a year. It's not easy to do it during the year. At least we have to understand that's the goal. That's in the back of our minds. And if we do that, then our attitudes will change. And like David said, we'll be able to affect the world and perhaps affect the situation. So I know it's not an easy thing to accept, but I think that's what the Torah is teaching us. Okay, so we'll stop here. If anyone has questions.
Thank you. So we need to learn to work for ourselves and have self-respect. Right. We need to have more respect for others. Like as the Jewish, we respect everyone as the Jewish people, and respect all people in the world.
Right. I think that's to do with God too. It's to do with the fact that we believe God made all of us in His image. It means us in a way that ultimately we all know what the right thing is. We all know that the bottom line is love. It's the bottom line is chesed. That's the day of din, Yom Kippur. Day of judgment. It's a difficult day. The bottom line of that day is chesed. God loves us. We don't even see it on the surface of Yom Kippur. You know, surface of everyone thinks it's a day in which we're bad, terrible. Everything's terrible. Everything's bad. But if we look at it carefully, we see behind the scenes that God really loves us, and that's the purpose of the Kippur, that God wants to forgive us. God wants us to have a relationship with Him, and anything that we when He admonishes us, He tells us we're going to have Holocaust, terrible things, Sefer Dvarim. Ultimately, the purpose of that is that for us to change it, for us to change what we think it, and to think it a way of love and peace. And that's what's not so difficult about this world. This world is a world of din, this world of strict justice and complications, and fighting at war. It's a look at the bottom line to what God recreated this world. It's for love and compassion and peace. That's why we end our Shemoneh Esrei with Shalom means completeness. It also means peace. And peace is the bottom line for this world, even though we don't see it. Okay, we need to call last week to Shabbat, and everyone's free to go. And if you have any questions,
which is the right to choose whether it's good or bad, you know.
Right.
And but also, God implements suffering through which us to do teshuva. We come back to Him. We go off the terrorists. It's a very difficult concept, but if we can find a way to come together, you know, I mean, it would be a really good thing. But it's going to take a lot of people to do it, you know, and it's going to take a long time, you know. You know?
Since it's a bottom line to life, I think it could happen. In a second, it could happen. The power is there, always there for potentially. So the question is whether we could access that power and give it to reach it to ourselves and to the world to achieve that. If the essence of the world happens, could happen in 1 second, even though we don't see it possible as being possible.
We could if we could just do it to the Jewish people. We could all come together as the Jewish people. But still, there's that one problem that's still left over there, you know. The Arabs.
It's so terrifying. God's salvation comes in 1 second. So that's something we have to believe could happen.
Are we going to have Midnight Mars?
Midnight Mars, yeah.
Okay. What's my year? Something almost like old times. Like somebody putting one to fill here. Like, you know, I mean, I remember when I used to come all the time. I used to come all the time in the early menu, you know. And I actually saw my briefcase, you know. I'd take it out every morning and put it back when. Do you still have them the morning menu? Monday through Friday.
Thank you.
You know, thank you very much, Rabbi. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh,
the implications for what he's going on in Israel, what goes on here. He said, if we value relationships more, and it counteracts this notion that both of our countries, we have a situation where half of the people think that the other half want to destroy the country. They each think that about the other. And that's the source of the anger and the discontent. It doesn't matter which side of the divide you're on. Everybody feels that way about the other side.
Right.
If we recognize that unity and relationships are a critical value to our existence, that counteracts this need to kind of shove people away because we disagree with them.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. Some advice that okay, it's got the my point. It's valuing relationships that will we don't value them enough. That's chinamis. Chinamis, we take it for granted. We just say, I don't value that aspect of life. And if we do value it, that's something that will help us come together. It's a beautiful summation that you just said.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Evan. Which one is David?